Ese tu lado es Cancún. What I'm going to be talking today is working done in collaboration with Atlas people, Keteria Samagan, Simona Gori, and people at Ternion. And then their work is based on two theory papers made with people at MIT and Yale and people at Yale and Fermilab. So the overview that first I will tell you, if you have the chance of choosing what kind of new physics you would like to find, you could make your wish list. What kind of wish list you will get? So that would be my first thing. Then I tell you, well, once I did my wish list, I found out, like 1 year ago, I found out two scenarios of electroweak symmetry breaking giving me exactly this wish list. So it looks like it's not that hard because I didn't work on this that much. And in this wish list, I had a lot of electrons, and hence the name of the talk, many electrons galore. So after we did a preliminary analysis and particle level plus some PIFIA and detector simulator analysis theories, then ALAS came into play, and we are going to do a full simulation. So I'll tell you a bit more about it. So as Pierre was talking about before, experimentalists are going to be very busy in the first year. They will be calibrating their detector using the standard candles. They will try to understand their electrons, their jets. They will try to understand electroweak cross-sections. They will try to maybe make a measurement of a W or the dot mass. They're going to be very busy with just standard models. But would you hope for new physics in the first year? And I didn't know that Pierre's talk was going to be about that, so it's great. He introduced all these things before. So if you had to hope for new physics, you could, for example, think about getting new physics in jets and jets plus missing energy. Let's say I have new physics that decays into a couple of jets, or I have typical new physics with many jets and missing energy. My take on this is, as a theorist, that this is pretty hard. And Pierre was explaining many problems associated with it. For example, in the case of the jets, there is a huge background, and this background has to be understood based on understanding PDFs and jet calibration, so that may be that. And when you talk about missing energy in the early running, that may be tough again because of missing energy calibration. So as a theorist, I would rather do something else. And if I could wish, I would do that. I will ask for a huge or sizable order peak of our production cross-section. Then I would like to have many, many electrons, so I don't have to carry this. Why not? And I would like to not to have to worry about missing energy. That's my wish list. And then you may be thinking, oh, this woman is crazy. Let's go. So what I'm going to tell you is that after deciding my wish list, I looked at models. And I found out that there are models with this wish list in it. So first I had to tell you that many models of beyond the standard model are based on trying to explain the hierarchy between the Planck scale and the electroweak scale. Since the LHC essentially is going to be looking, is our window to the electroweak phase transition, is a great place to understand where this hierarchy came from or what is the solution for this hierarchy. So many beyond the standard models are based on trying to explain that. And among those, very famous ones are supersymmetry, so-called extra dimensions, and Technicolor. And all those guys are trying to address the hierarchy problem. And they do it in different ways. For example, supersymmetry says the hierarchy problem is a problem because I have to impose a symmetry. Once I impose a symmetry, supersymmetry, I don't have any problem anymore. The problem is that supersymmetry cannot be realized in nature. It has to be broken. And if you don't want to kind of mess around again with the same hierarchy problem, it has to be broken in a specific way, in a soft break. That's fine. Extra dimensions deals with the hierarchy problem in a slightly different way. Instead of imposing a symmetry, says, in fact, the problem between the Planck scale and the electroweak scale is a question of perspective. If you add to the game extra dimensions, what you thought it was a large scale is in fact a small scale and vice versa. So that's another way of solving the problem. And the third solution, which is technicolor, is the GRB, because essentially people say that in the 80s, the electroweak phase transition is not the first phase transition we see in nature. We see how chiral symmetry is broken, we see superconductivity, we condensed matter, we see many systems where there is such a phase transition, similar to the electroweak. And in none of these systems, there was a Higgs mechanism going on. Instead of that, we had strong interactions, or very, very strongly binding interactions that trigger this phase transition. So technicolor takes ideas from this déjà vu nature and just translates them to the electroweak scale. But because we understand or we know about these other phase transitions, we know that it is very hard to compute in, for example, chiral symmetry breaking. And as theorists, it's kind of scary to think that once we start looking into the electroweak phase transition at the LHC, we will end up with strong interactions and with a very limited knowledge of tools to work with. So it is scary, but it may be true. Recently, what happened is that there was a lot of activity in extra dimensions, or even comparable to the activity in supersymmetry. People kind of were not so excited about technicolor for the reasons I explained, but like 5 years ago or so, people working in extra dimensions, they realized that the problems they had, they were very similar to the problems they've seen in
technicolor before.
And whereas in extra dimensions, you were able to compute few things. So little by little, they realized that not only the problems were similar, also, the phenomenology was kind of indistinguishable. So they thought, okay, there must be some kind of holographic description in terms of extra dimensions of technicolor models. And all this, of course, inspired on this so-called ADS-CFT that is pretty famous nowadays. So the bottom line is that there are all these very popular alternatives to the standard models, supersymmetry, extra dimensions, and technicolor. And nowadays, we understand that we can work in extra dimensions and, in fact, be doing a model of technicolor. So you have two for the price of one. So then the question is my wish list in any of those models? I want a strong production cross-section, I want many leptons, and I don't want missing energy. The answer is yes, otherwise I wouldn't be giving this talk. So one example is in the MSSM, and we call it leptogenic supersymmetry. I can give you a motivation why this model shows up in supersymmetry, but you can just take the pragmatic approach that in the MSSM, you can have many orderings of the spectrum. If you have this particular one, what you will find out is at the top of the spectrum, you get quarks. These quarks, even let's say they are 1 TeV, the production cross-section is pretty high, or for the picobon, so you will produce these guys first. Once they decay into gaechinos, they had to lose their color by producing very energetic jets. These gaechinos had to decay, they had no other way to decay but to decay into sleptons, by producing leptons. These sleptons may decay again into the other leptons, producing even more leptons, or, and interestingly, they can produce Higgses if they are muons or stars, third generation or second generation. So at the end of the day, we have in the bottom of the spectrum a stable charged particle stable for collider purposes. So we have a very nice signatures of early discovery because it's a large production cross section, because there is no missing energy in any of these decays. There will be a robust prediction for the spectrum. There are many, many leptons. And what is interesting is that you can have the Higgs decaying into BB bar this way, like Higgs decaying in association with many leptons. So this, just asking for the MSSM to have this ordering gives you the wish list. Another example is in the context of extra dimensions. There is something called Higgsless. Don't worry much about the Higgsless. It's just a model in world extra dimensions. And as the name says, it doesn't have a Higgs. The way it breaks electroweak symmetry is by something called boundary conditions. At the end of the day, this breaking is just a similar to a technicolor scenario. So there might be a technicolor scenario that looks like Higgsless. But Higgsless is a model that you write down, you set up in extra dimensions, and you just complete. So the nice feature of Higgsless is because of problems with electroweak precision tests, in Higgsless, there must be a degeneracy between the spin 1 and spin 1 half resonances. In the language of extra dimensions, those are called Kaluza-Klein's. So there must be a degeneracy between quark Kaluza-Klein's and W Kaluza-Klein's. And those guys have to be below the TEV, otherwise it wouldn't work for a model of electroweak symmetry breaking. So summing up, we have a model with a particular feature of having heavy quarks and heavy W prams and Z prams. They have to be near each other, and they have to be below the TEV. In the context of technicolor, that's the same as saying that there must be some kind of degeneracy between technivariants and technimesons. So before you die of boredom, this is just a model. In extra dimensions, it is pretty popular because it's an alternative to the Higgs mechanism. There is no Higgs. And this model has to be viable. It has to do all these things, to be light and to have this degeneracy. So we can, for example, pair produce Kaluza-Klein fermions in this form or with the exchange of a KK gluon. And if those Kaluza-Klein fermions, quarks, decay to Z and a jet, you will end up with signatures that contain many leptons, four leptons, no missing energy, and is also an early discovery because the cross section for this guy, including this T-channel exchange, is very large. So right now, I have told you there are, just looking around, there are at least two examples of models in a very different context, supersymmetry and extra dimensions or technicolor, where you could find signatures with no missing energy, many leptons, and a very appreciable production cross section. So what I'm going to go on now is by explaining a particular channel, four lepton channel in both models. So first thing I had to tell you is that for the supersymmetric model, everything I'm going to show you is done at Parton level with Markgraf, then passed through Pythia, and then because we were theorists and we cannot publish with ATL fast, what we did is to just copy-paste their sorry. So everywhere I'm going to be showing plots for 14 TeV, but the change from 14 to 10 TeV is really roughly a factor 3 in the total production, total cross-section. So keep that in mind. So first I told you that in the Leptosusi model, we don't have missing energy because we have a lepton that is stable. This is very normal in any kind of gravity, no, gauge or gauchino mediation, where the gravitino is dark matter. Why? Because the gravitino has very plant suppressed couplings to the sleptons, And the fact that it's long lived is kind of natural. Another feature of leptosuchy is that staus, electrons, and smuons are very degenerate with each other. And although this electron and smuon can decay into the stau, it produces leptons that are very, very soft. So at the end of the day, there is no kink, and the leptons are too soft. So you can think on this scenario as this so-called coarse lepton scenario, as in the G2B in the Atlas TDR. Just remember that the Atlas TDR G2B is a different scenario than this one. The only thing that they share is this coarse lepton scenario. So that's a detail. Now we had to ask ourselves, okay, so we have a heavy lepton, it is collider stable. How do we see this guy? Essentially, it gets to the muon chambers, it hits like a muon, so if we don't do any measurement of the beta, we are going to think there is a muon, which is fine. But experimentalists are smarter than that, and in fact, if by looking in the muon chambers and the tracker or electromagnetic calorimeter, they are able to reconstruct the mass and they even get a charge identification. To do this reconstruction, the main problems are backgrounds. They can be instrumental, and there is little knowledge about this so far. They can be a standard model. But two problems that appear besides backgrounds is maybe this guy is slow, and he's so slow that it starts before it decays, the next branch crossing happens. So if they are too slow, there will be a problem with the branch crossing time, and you may miss this guy. The other problem is that it may be so fast that it's very difficult to distinguish this guy from a muon. So in our case, first we look at the standard model backgrounds, and the bottom line is that it's very easy to get rid of standard model backgrounds if the PT of your guys is pretty high, because the standard model tends to be soft. So if you look at our signal, the PT of the lepton has this kind of distribution. So this is 200, 400, and so on and so forth. So imposing cuts of order 50 GeV on the lepton is not such a big deal. Bottom line is that I don't have to worry that much about the standard model backgrounds for this lepton. But what I had to worry about is because they are so energetic, they come from the decay of a very heavy guy. At the end of the day, you look at the beta distribution of the lepton, it looks like this. And if you look at the last studies for such very fast leptons or heavy charged particles, you see that because of the error in beta, maybe all these guys won't be missed. Meaning that if they are there, they will arrive in the correct branch crossing time. They will hit the muon chambers. You will think it's a muon, and there won't be no mass measurement. So they won't be missed. They will be misidentified as muons. Because we didn't want to enter into all these subtleties, what we did is assume that every time there is a lepton, it's going to be measured as a muon. So signatures like this one, I produce two squarks. The squarks decay into two very energetic jets, which at the end of the day we have two leptons and two sleptons. We assume in our analysis that these guys are going to be misidentified as muons. So signatures of, for example, two leptons, two sleptons, and two jets, and then being four leptons and two jets. So if you look at this kind of signature, it is pretty busy. You have six objects, four leptons and two jets. And if you want to do a mass reconstruction, the main problem facing here is you don't have a standard model background, very little standard model background for that. What you are going to have problems with is combinatorics. Because imagine that I want to reconstruct the mass of this guy. I need to pair the correct lepton with the one lepton with the correct lepton among these three. So what we did is the following. We looked into take four leptons, look at two that are opposite sign leptons. And if we plot the distribution of delta R versus the invariant mass, what we saw is that the leptons that come from the decay of the same particle, because this particle is pretty energetic, they tend to have a smaller delta R. So at the end of the day, we have that this is the signal, and this is the combinatorics. And the combinatorics tends to be spread around in any value of a delta R, whereas our signal has the smaller delta R. We did that. And what we obtain is the following. And this is a subtlety about this model, is if you can, once you reduce your combinatorics, you get the correct pair of lepton-slepton. If you can do a measurement of the slepton mass and plot the invariant mass, you will obtain this kind of peaks. So what we saw is that around 60% of the time, you will be able to do that. So you get very nice peaks. Think that this is for one inverse friend of R, and 14 TeV, so divide by 3. And you know, there's a bunch of events, and this delta R selection is pretty good. But there is a little subtlety here. Imagine that now the slepton is misidentified as a muon. Then when you try to write down what is the invariant mass of the lepton and S lepton, there is a piece missing, and it's the mass. So once you plot that, taking into account that there is no mass measurement, what you're going to obtain is something that looks a lot like transverse mass, but now instead of the missing piece is not missing energy, but the missing mass. So you can still see a signature, you can still determine where the peaks are, but the signature is now looking more like a transverse mass, just because there is a misidentification. Okay. So if they go so fast that there is no way of getting a measurement of the mass, and you just want to plot the invariant mass, you cannot use this information, right? So you. Right. So when you try to plot an invariant mass, including this very fast guy, there will be something missing, the mass.
That's not measuring the muon mass is not a requirement of actually paying it with.
So that's a question we asked the experimentalists at Atlas, and it seems that the people that is in charge is in Technion. And what they say that in principle, what they do is take everybody, including the beta large variable. And so they haven't thought of this kind of signature. What they do is only when they are sure, they plot the mass. So what we told them is, well, you can plot the invariant mass even when you are not sure about the mass, because you still see these signatures. Okay. So now I explained to you what are the leptosusi for lepton signatures and what are the subtleties there. Let's go to the same signature, but in extra dimensions and in Technicolor. So in this case, all the plots are again done part of level, PIFIA, and here we didn't have an issue with pretty good simulators, PGS, so we just used PGS. And again, we didn't have to impose any missing energy cut, because the number of lepton selection was enough to get rid of combinatorics. And using again the same trick about the delta R, we were able to take, let's say, two leptons and one jet and reconstruct what is the heavy quark mass. So the same, even taking into account smearing and some detector effects theory way of taking into account detector effects, and we were still able to find a very nice peak for the square mass, or for the heavy square mass. And again, this is the number of events for one inverse centaur and 14 TeV. So pretty striking signature. So in both cases, in supersymmetry or in extra dimensions, we may have signatures with many leptons, no missing energy. Similar strategies can be used for both of them. But one thing I want to tell you is, stepping back a little bit, In fact, you don't need to buy into any model. Just think that you have any extension of the standard model with a new heavy quark. Let's say this new heavy quark is of order 1 TeV, and it has a non-negligible decay to Z bosons. So you will precisely find that the production cross-section is order picogon, that there are signatures with 4 leptons and 2 jets, and there is no missing energy. So the signatures that I showed to you, they are more generic than just supersymmetry or my particular model of extended dimensions. So I get very often the question of, oh, okay, so you plot all these things for 4 leptons and 2 jets with no background in it. And there are always backgrounds. I agree, there are always backgrounds. So what we did is to try to estimate the backgrounds for 4 leptons and 2 jets. So you may ask yourself, okay, what are the backgrounds for 4 leptons and 2 jets? When there are so many jets and everybody is pretty hard, because if you look at the PT of the leptons or S leptons and the PT of the leading jets, they are pretty hard. So we did the following. We assume isolation. So we impose isolation, some hardness cuts, and also assume all the time that the S leptons are misidentified. Because once you are able to identify a S lepton, a new particle, there is no standard model background and you don't have to care anymore. So we try to be as conservative as possible. We didn't use any missing energy cut or S lepton identification. And then when we did this, look at the LSTDR and ask experimentalists about efficiencies for fakes. Because as you can imagine, our main backgrounds are going to be fakes. What we got is that a jet can be faking an electron with a rate of order 10 to the minus 4. I cannot imagine how a jet could fake a muon, but we decided to just be stupid and use 10 to the minus 4 as well. And from time to time, when a B quark decays, it produces a lepton and a jet that is so soft that it looks like an isolated lepton. So the probability of this happening, of B decay producing an isolated lepton, is of order 5, 10 to the minus 3. So using these estimates for fakes, we did the following. We generated all these backgrounds in MATGen and MATGraph, TT bar, plus years, W plus years, WC plus years, CC plus years, anything that we could think about. And we also took the total cross-section for QCD jets, apply those fake grades, and most of the time, just asking for 4 leptons was killing most of them. Sometimes you also had to use the fact that the PT of the jets, the cut we are using in the PT of the jets is order 100 GeV, or the PT of the leptons of order 50 GeV, and isolation for all of them. Our conclusion is that after doing all this, there was no background. Not even close to be femtobar. So that's all what we can do until we have data, but it looks like having pre-energetic 4 leptons and 2 jets is quite background-free, at least what we can estimate. So what ALAS is doing now, and I'm doing it with them, is the following. When I spoke to the Higgs ALAS coordinator, what I told him is that in general, the common law is that having a light Higgs means that the Higgs would like to decay into BB bar. It happens 80 or 90% of the time. But this by itself is a too hard channel. So it's kind of it's hopeless to look for Higgs into BB bar by itself. So what people do is instead looking into cleaner channels like diphoton or 2 taus that have a very small branching ratio, which is fine. It's cleaner, but you are paying the price of the branching ratio. And what you knew already is that a supersymmetric Higgs has to be that light. And thanks to the Batron bounds, the Higgs has to be that light. So it seems like a hopeless situation. Whereas if you had the Higgs, you were so lucky that the Higgs was decaying not by itself, but in association with nice clean handles, for example, many leptons, then backgrounds wouldn't be no longer an issue. I think in general it's worth not giving up the hope of finding a light Higgs in this channel and just try to find it in a more complex final state. But in the case of leptosuzy, it just happened naturally that the Higgs decays into BB bar with four leptons associated with it. So of course that looks like a very interesting thing, a study to do for light Higgs. So people at Atlas realized that in fact in this model, believe it or not, it may not be so, probably not be the model of nature, but in general it would be an interesting study to look at Higgs to BB bar in association with many leptons. And that was a good example of this kind of production. So interesting features about the Higgs in this channel is that because there are so many leptons, maybe you don't even need a strong missing energy cut. And maybe you don't even need B tagging, asking for B tagging. Just asking for, let's say you get two leptons for pair production, asking for the third and fourth lepton, no, sorry, yet, to can reconstruct the Higgs is enough, and you don't need B tagging, which may be difficult at the beginning of and the early run. So, for all these reasons, experimenters were interested in that. So, the Higgs coordinator, with the help of Simone Arroli, started doing the validation part of this full simulation. But in order to pass this full simulation through GEAN, because it has all these heavy leptons that are chumps or heavy charged particles, we needed the help of these people in Technion. So the only thing I can tell you is that finally today this went to final submission. And the good news is that once we get this done, the official Monte Carlo, then we can study models with high leptonic multiplicity, independently of the Higgs, because this sample that is going to be generated will contain samples with four leptons, with five leptons, with six leptons, and all those can be studied. You can, of course, the main target is to study Higgs to BB bar. You can also study what are the signatures with low Higgs leptons. But from the theory point of view, what is more interesting is that once I have this Monte Carlo, I can do a signature-based analysis of four leptons plus X. And this signature-based analysis will be useful for all those models I've been talking about. So this study will be good not only for leptosuzy, but for any other model producing many leptons. I'm going very fast. So concluding, if you ask for early signatures, they seem to be all around the place. We need to look for them because you know that if you ask a theorist, every theorist has their own their favorite model. But as an experimentalist, probably you want to do an order study. Something that you can do for next year is better than something that you can do for the next 5 years. So one thing to remember is that every time you talk about SUSY, SUSY signatures are generally based on a particular ordering of the spectrum, and this is very important, the cascade thing. So you know, and I don't have to remind you, that M-SUGRA is not generic. So anything that is tied to M-SUGRA only is missing interesting new phenomena. Another thing I wanted to tell you is that I don't think you should give up hope on early Higgs physics, given Tevatron resource, but try to look for Higgs physics as in association with clean handles, like in our case with four leptons. And here I just wanted to explain to you that if there are all, just thinking a little bit, there are two examples in completely different setups, supersymmetry, extra dimensions, or technicolor, whose discovery reach is below one inverse femtobar, because their signatures are so clean. And they both share these signatures of being early discovery reverse determination of the spectrum with no missing energy and many, many electrons. Thank you.
Questions?
Yeah. I understand why you might not have Jetson missing it in your wish list.
For me.
Yeah. But like you saw, once you have three or four leptons, the events are very clean. So whether you have missing a T or not, you don't need to require
it. Extending, yes.
So in the previous slide, you had four leptons plus X, right?
And maybe that,
you can have missing a T there. It doesn't matter. You don't need to cut on it.
Only correct, yes. At the end, with the 11th thing, we have imposing any missing energy cut. The lepton through multiplicity is good enough to pick up your signal.
Your heavy fermions decay in the Z plus something 100% of the time?
No, they do some matching ratio for the 30%. But since the production cross section is so huge, you can afford that. So in our case, it's for the pico band because it's a color band.
So decay in the Z plus what else?
Jet. So for example, you could, since it's a neutral, the Z is neutral, it has to be. The UKK, the heavy up quark, will decay into the up quark and the Z.
Oh, so it doesn't have to be the top?
No, it doesn't have to be the top.
You mentioned just general heavy quarks, which would have to be vector-like. In many of those models, I think they decay mostly in tops plus Z.
Yeah, for that, this Higgs-less model is funny because the DS parameter problem, the electrical precision test problem, that forces these quarks, the second and first generation quarks, to be light and to be degenerated with the drop C prime and W prime. And then this kind of decay happens. But it's true. Third generation should be there as well.
Other questions? Yeah.
Yes.
I have a question about your missing mass plot.
Yes.
So in that plot,
I have to say that I'm ashamed because we put the paper out and we haven't realized.
In that plot, we always have the same missing mass.
Yes.
So can we redo with several values of this missing mass to check which one?
Right. So in fact, what you are proposing is similar to what people do for transverse mass. Is that to scan in the parameter space of masses? We could try to do that as well, but we.
Can we have a good resolution of this mass by doing that? Yes?
If what we are doing is similar to what people are doing with transverse mass, yes, it looks like it has nice prospects. It's a very good idea. Yeah, lazy.
Are there any other questions? Let's thank Veronica again. Now until 4:10.